From racing.com and Top Sport, this is A Good Three with Dr. Turf, Matt Welsh and Paul Tatnall.
Hello and welcome to another episode of A Good Three. Matt Welsh, Dr. Turf, Paul Tatnall. I'll start with you, Turfy. How are you?
The Matt Welsh. Is it the Matt Welsh?
And it's not just another episode of A Good Three, Turf. It's a special episode.
It is.
It is special because we've got a very special guest coming on.
We do.
Executive General Manager of Racing, Matty Welsh.
Congratulations to you. This is a bloke that, you know, I could ring him and say, get me a coffee, will you? And now I've got to ring his secretary to talk to him.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. No, you don't.
Do you have a PA? Will you have a PA?
He has an office.
Will you have a PA?
No, I have
no
idea.
Now, on all serious, Matty, we are stoked for your appointment as the new executive general manager of racing, replacing Greg Carpenter, who is going to Hong Kong. The announcement caught a few by surprise, but not those who.
I thought I was being pranked.
How many times have I hinted the last 2 weeks as big challenges for the next executive general manager of racing?
Yeah.
And Turf sitting there with his eyes on the
curve. Yeah, you've set the bar bloody high.
I know. So, in all seriousness, Matty, fantastic role. You're a known passionate advocate of innovating racing. Are you worried that you're going to offside a few people on the way as you put your agenda forward?
Hopefully not. No, I hope not. Hopefully we can get everyone collaborating together and get everyone on side. I think consultation is probably the key to that, and making sure that everyone's having a voice and being heard in the programming discussions going forward. But
you think this podcast had any influence on the final?
Absolutely.
Hey, in all seriousness,
it was number one on the resume.
You're a punter, and that's what I like about it, because without being facetious, I think we're the forgotten, you know, people in racing in a way. Like, nothing to me ever seems to be in the favour of the punter. It seems to be in the favour of turnover and everything else, but without really considering what we want and what we need.
Yeah, I think that Victorian racing has probably led the way in a sense. I mean, we saw deduction standardised a couple of weeks ago, which was very well received. And these sorts of things are really important.
3 years too late, but yes, it was.
The punter is the customer at the end of the day, and the customer is at the centre of everything.
He's already sounding like an executive turf list. A couple of really quick yes or no questions.
I hadn't finished answering.
No, we were bored by that, to be frank. really quick questions. Any changes to the All-Star Mile?
Oh, I don't go there need to, first up.
Need to chat to the team first, and none of those sorts of things will be discussed at this stage.
Should the spring carnival be shifted later back into November?
I think not committing to shifting current races, but I certainly think there's a great opportunity to capitalise further through November and December. And I've said that for ages. No secret.
I'll give you a heads up, a bit of help here for the All-Star Mile. Needs a little bit more marketing budget.
This is what I love. All of a sudden, he's just got two hats on for the next couple of weeks. But I'm with you, Turf. What I also like about it is
he's
well,
a punter. For God, no,
not anymore.
God.
Not anymore. He's not allowed to punt
anymore. Are you allowed to? No. It's like, you know, people in footy and management and all of that stuff. They're not allowed to bet. And I keep thinking, I don't know if I'd accept that position. Like, I remember.
How much money you'd save if you did, though.
I remember, like, this is being smart, Alec, but.
Oh, geez, there's a shock.
But 20 years ago, being asked something about any interest in being on the board of the Melbourne Football Club, and thinking, I don't think you're allowed to bet on football.
Your brother was on the board, though, wasn't he?
He was. Yes, he was. He was there with that imbecile Joe Kutnick.
I wouldn't necessarily suggest you preface things by saying I'm not being a smart aleck. Just let people know when you are being a smart aleck.
Righto.
Because that's probably your
anyway. Well done, you.
Seriousness, though, I do just want to say Greg Carpenter has done an incredible job over a long period of time, and I said this story on ATL on Monday, but I mentioned to my mother that got this new job, and she said, oh, that's nice. That's very nice. And then she rang me back 24 hours later, having Googled Greg Carpenter, and said, my God, you have got enormous shoes to fill. He has done absolutely everything.
No, so I love that. Hold up, platitudes as you shove him out the door. That's tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, he's certainly Hong Kong's gain. So
yep. I just love how polished he sounds now. So executive sounding.
Political.
The customer punter we've known, Turf, how long do you reckon till we lose him to the dark side?
About 15 minutes.
Anyway, enough of that. We have got an incredibly special guest
really?
On the line.
Don't overcook it.
A As I mentioned, we've got an incredibly special guest on the line. He dominates the Melbourne airwaves throughout the morning. But judging by the fact he wrote a series, a love letter to racing, I suggest he has a fair passion for the sport of kings. I speak of none other than Ross Stevenson. And Ross, do you have an unyielding passion for racing?
Not only have I had a passion for racing since my mother got me a job in the TAB in Church Street, Hawthorne, when I was about 12, I'd say it gets more intense with every passing year. I love it even more and more. And I especially through COVID, how on earth we would have got through lockdown in Melbourne without racing, I got no idea. But racing's been very kind to me because my first job was, and I think, Turfy, you'll be old enough to remember this, that your handwritten TAB ticket that you got, you could only collect at the agency where you bought it. So, and the reason you knew where you bought it was the name of the agency was stamped
on the ticket,
on the back of every ticket. Well, I was the person who stamped Hawthorne on the back. That's all my job was. And just wrote, turning the pages, stamp, turn, stamp, turn. I got $1 an hour for 3 hours' work on a Saturday morning. So you can imagine, it set me on the course of punting, and you can imagine what that ledger looks like now.
Okay, after 50 years of punting, Roscoe, any idea where you sit?
I've spoken to my friend Hamish about that, and we think it's something that probably happens when you die. The first thing is you go to heaven, and before you get in, St. Peter goes, by the way, here's what you've done.
Can I remind you that, and I suspect it's not going to be a pretty figure that you're presented with when that day comes, but there's no real sort of formula that your punting operates on, because I do remember you getting a daily double one day, and let's say it was 4 and 6, and I asked you how you came up with 4 and 6, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was the tar content of the packet of cigarettes you were smoking, 4.6. Is that true?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. Can I tell you a story from, well, I think it's last year, but you know how the COVID years run together and you can't tell which is which. The fruit has not fallen far from the tree, fellas. We've started, because I'm a responsible parent, we have a family quaddy every Saturday. Everyone gets to pick a horse. And my six-year-old daughter, she gets the colours and goes through and picks a horse based on colours. Sarah just picks on names. I try to throw a bit of Hunter and a bit of Lester in there just to, you know, for a bit of sanity. And that leaves my 10-year-old son, and I said to him, come up here and have a look at the form guide and pick your horses. So he's got his head buried in a Nintendo Switch, so he's, you know, he's lazy. And he goes, no, I'll just have number 4. So the other part of the story is we put the bet on, and I put it on Sarah's phone because she's so desperate she's opened an account. So I put the numbers into the phone, and I push, yeah, I'll put the quaddy on. And it says bet pending. And I'm thinking, what do you mean bet pending? Like it's a quaddy, like it's on the tote. Why would you? And I pushed it. Bet pending. Anyway, it says bet pending. Number 4 won the first leg, paid $8.
Oh, no.
Thing of Mine won the second leg, paid $6. Number 4 won the third leg, paid $126.
Value.
Value. It was at Flemington. You'll know the name of the wretched horse last year.
Romancer.
And anyway, my thing won the last. The quaddy paid $51,000.
But?
When I pushed the button for the second time to say bet pending, I put it on again.
Oh, oh my God.
That is unbelievable.
A good story. Good story. There's not many of them.
I was waiting for the heartbreak.
No heartbreak.
Ross, was it the horse that made you fall in love with racing? Was it the punt? Was it the stories? What was it that really got you in?
I reckon it was the people around it. You know, when I wrote my love letter to racing, I tried to sort of think about why I love racing so much. And I can just, Turfy will be ready to pounce. But I distilled it down to racing people are never boring. You know, it's all about a game of chance. And it's all about stories. There's always stories. And I know Turfy will be compiling a list of boring people involved in racing. It's a bit like John Clark, Turfy. I said to him once, I said, John, I've never met a New Zealander I didn't like. He said, I'll write you a list.
Yeah. Obviously, we were talking about that you've never met a boring person in racing, and it did remind me, on Derby Day about 25 years ago, within 30 seconds I got asked for my Derby tip, firstly by Peter Costello, the Federal Treasurer at the time, and then by Tony Mockbell. 30 seconds later, and I'm thinking, well, that is racing for you. And
yeah.
I can tell you, Costello got the B set.
Yeah, it's the... it's the uncertainty. It's the stories. It's the people. You know, when you think about when I think of trainers that I know that come to Top of Mind, they're very amusing people. Like David Hayes is very funny. Chris Waller is a very funny guy. He's got a wicked sense of humour. It's super bright. I've known Mick Price since he was probably 14. Mick, when he went to Kew High School. He's very taciturn sort of fella, but they've all got an impishness in their sense of humour.
Ross, in a former life as a chief of staff at the Herald Sun, I used to sit at my news desk and listen to you and John at the time, often scoop us and often set the agenda for the day. The 3AW morning show speaks to, in a way I believe, communicates really well to Melbourne, that knows Melbourne. As racing struggles to continue to communicate to wider audiences, having that ability to communicate, what do you think we need to do as an industry to get more of the younger generations back into the sport? How do we communicate to them better?
Most of the people I know at work who are interested in horse racing are in their 30s. My children in their 20s are interested. And as far as I can tell, the bulk of advertising by bookmakers is directed at men in their 20s and 30s. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, definitely.
The people I know that in their 30s who are interested in horse racing are interested not in the punt, they're interested in the horses themselves. Even to a sort of international level. You know, they know what's going to be favourite for the Ark and so I would communicate the stories.
The horses themselves, we're talking about, you know, all the different aspects of racing. The one thing that's different, Roscoe, you know, I'm sure you've had the odd losing day and you wake up the next day and it's history, it's forgotten. But horse ownership, it takes some time to get over a poor run of a horse you've owned. What about your own history with ownership? Do you know what I mean? You've had a number of horses. We've had a couple together. And the deflation after a poor run is palpable.
Yeah. But nevertheless, it's a bit like childbirth. I mean, presumably, you know, once you've done it once, why on earth would you go back more than once? That's one part of it that I'm deliberately scaling down. My interest remains high, but it's a tough caper, isn't it? Owning a horse, and you always figure the next one you're going to knock back is going to be the one that wins the Melbourne Cup. You hang in there. The two best horses I've owned, one was with you, Turvey. That was Air Hostess.
Yes, Handy.
She was a mighty filly who won the Talon Dirt Stakes at her third start.
Yep.
Naturally got injured because she had some ability.
She was quick.
She was quick. You got a horse that's no good, you could drop it off Nauru House. It wouldn't hurt a break a fingernail. But this year, I come from Brisbane. I was born in Brisbane. And this year, we had a horse called Irish Sequel that it won the Winter Cup at Rose Hill. And the plan was to take it back up to the Tats in Eagle Farm 3 weeks later. On Tuesday, Chris Waller rang up and said, you know what, that's not a very strong Brisbane Cup field. I'll put him on a float. Let's go up and run him in the Brisbane Cup, which he won. So that was a thrill to win a Cup, a Group 2. So working my way there. And that, I tell you what, I was going through some papers, Turfy, when my mum, who you knew very well, when my mum passed away a few years back, and I saw a reference to a horse I owned. If you'd put me in a witness box, sworn on a Bible, and asked me whether I'd owned a horse called that, I would have sworn I'd never owned it. So maybe the really bad ones you just forget.
Who was it?
I can't remember. I looked at it and I thought, I don't remember even owning that horse.
So when we were knocking around 3RRR in about 1981, did you have any inkling what that Saturday morning show that you did on 3RRR all those years ago, Lawyers, Guns and Money, where it would end up?
No.
Did you want to be a lawyer? Did you want to stay a lawyer at that time?
No, probably. I probably would have stayed a lawyer, but for the fact that someone came from 3AW offering a job. I probably, if that hadn't have happened, I'd still be the world's unhappiest lawyer these years later. And I guess I don't know whether you did or not, but that Saturday morning lineup was pretty bloody good. I don't know whether we sort of ever appreciated that punter to punter. Could have been Champions and Lawyers, Guns and Money. It was a fair 3 hours. Mm.
Somehow we're all still working.
Ross, Ross, if you could win one of the majors down here in Victoria, we've got some fantastic time-honoured races. Would it be the Cup? Would it be the Cox Plate? What would be the one race you'd absolutely love to win?
No, the Melbourne Cup by a long way. We interviewed on our television show that has 7 viewers, that's racing. We interviewed Baz McCullum. I should give him his right first name. Everyone calls him
Brendan,
Baz.
Yeah.
Yeah, the New Zealand cricketer who was just about my favourite cricketer in the world when he was playing.
Names his
he's a mad
after
racing
horses.
Man. You should get him on for a chat. And we asked him what race he wanted to win in the world. He said the Cox Plate, and I guess there are. Who do you go? What race do you?
Melbourne
to me,
Cup.
It's the Cup by a long way,
by 100 yards.
Ross, I was talking to Archie Alexander yesterday morning about his working hours and how he complains about getting up at 3:30 a.m. every day. If there's one man in the media that actually could understand what it's like to work the hours of a horse trainer, it is yourself. How the hell do you get up that early every morning?
Yeah, I tell you what, it's not fun. COVID sort of made it not fun. I don't know why I wasn't sleeping very well. I'm back to sleeping well now. But I remember when I was in a car race at the Grand Prix a few years back, when I'd go down every morning to catch a taxi to go into work, there were 2 other people from the car race who were waiting in the foyer to do the same thing. It was Lee Friedman and Nicole Livingston. we were the 3 that had to get up early. It's hard, but I'll say this. My alarm clock goes off at 4 o'clock. My producer, Scorch Davidson's, goes off at 2, and I know that Chris Waller sets his alarm for 2:59 so that it has the discipline of starting with a 2. Mm-hmm. And I always say 4 o'clock is early in the morning. 2 o'clock is the middle of the night.
So, I assume that was the celebrity car race at the Australian Grand Prix you were talking about there.
Where I was trying to avoid the use of that word, John.
Yeah. Well, it reminded me that another great mate of both of ours, like we've owned horses with, Trevor Marmalade, he also drove in the celebrity race at the Australian Grand Prix with his handbrake on, which is not all that well known, but it is true.
Yeah. Do you remember when we owned Air Hostess, there was some suggestion that there were 3 people who weren't racing a horse in their real name, that it was down as R. Campbell, J. Rothfield and
J. Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and they said their real names are Dr. Turf, Trevor Marmalade and Ross Stevenson.
That is correct, which is not really kosher in the racing industry to race a name under a name other than what you're known as.
No, it will never have been done.
Ross, when I watch That's Racing, it looks like you and Haim are just having so much fun on the show. It's clearly something you really enjoy doing.
Yeah, I love working with Haim, and we have strict rules, sort of the same rules really that we have on the radio program, which is easy to do on radio, and that is to tell each other nothing about what you are going to do yourself on the show. which is, you know, pretty much the way radio is normally done. But television, as I'm sure you know, television is like is more about control and wanting to know, you know, what you're going to say and what you're going to do. And our rule is nothing. It's whatever happens for the first time when the cameras are on. I remember being in New York once and watching the pre-game show for the NFL. And it was down near the bottom of Central Park, near the, whatever that famous hotel is. Anyway, I watched it, the whole pre-game show, and they finished. And they said, okay, folks, great rehearsal. We'll start in 20 minutes. They did the whole show as a rehearsal.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point?
Yeah, don't go down that path ever. One of the other cute things I love on That's Racing is when you're interviewing people from all walks of life that we never knew had a love of horse racing. Like Steve Harley from Cockney Rebel was one that comes to mind because I used to love that song. They were one hit wonder band, if you like, but he was fantastic. Who's surprised you the most about their love of racing?
Oh, I'd say I'd say Steve Harley from Cockney Rebel. Their song was absolute belter. Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile.
Yeah, great song.
I loved him because he told stories about he backed his own horse to win a race in England, and clearly used to it must have been a feature race, and in the lead up, the weeks leading up, he'd have a bet when he was drunk. And forget that he'd put the bet on, and then he'd have another one. And by the time the horse won the race, and he found something like £90,000 in winning bets that he'd put on that he didn't remember putting on.
Anyone else?
And he gave me permission to name my next horse Make Me Smile, which I haven't done yet.
Now, Ross, I understand that you're about to head overseas again to France now. I believe you're going to be watching some racing over there, one of our best and very elegant. Is it to go and see the racing or is it to sample some of the Burgundy?
Well, that's easy because we've got a week. I'm going for 2 weeks. The first week is in Bordeaux, at Saint-Emilion, and that'll take care of the red wine. And then it's on the train back to Paris for the lead up to the Arc. I know you blokes will know more about the status of Very Elegant. The last time I looked at a betting market, Very Elegant had in brackets after it, Not Nom, close bracket. So I assume it's not running, is it?
Well, I think she needed to turn things around. I think she's running this weekend on Sunday night.
She needs to run well on Sunday, I think.
Needs to turn things around pretty quickly after that last start effort, I think, was what Bray Sikorski suggested to us.
You've been to racetracks all around the world. What's your favourite?
What's
the quirky
question.
One? Give us a quirky one.
New Caledonia, the one in New Mia. It's absolutely beautiful. No. It runs second. Gavea, G-A-V-E-A. Have a look at Gavea in Rio. It's the most beautiful race. It's got three Art Deco grandstands. This is utterly beautiful. And when you've got three legs of the quaddy in and you need assistance to get your fourth leg, you cast your eyes up and there is Christ the Redeemer.
Looking down on the track.
Look at that. Get on Google Images and look at Rio Racetrack, Gavea, and you'll see the setting. You know, it's not far from Copacabana Beach. It's under Christ the Redeemer. It's a beautiful racetrack. Yeah, that's it for sure.
Ross, how will you spend the spring carnival? Do you get out on track a bit?
I do. I went to the Cup last year. I've had four epiphanies in my life in the Cup. When I was at school, I was certain Piping Lane was going to win. Mm. When Sub-Zero won, I was certain Sub-Zero was going to win. I didn't get a bet on because that was the year the TAB computer broke down and a lot of people didn't get on. I had an epiphany that Tectionist would win. And then last Monday before the Cup, I was going through the form and I said to myself, why on earth wouldn't Very Elegant win this Cup? So on the radio program, we got Chris Waller on the next day and I said, Chris, I've got very good news for you. this is going to be a great comfort to you, but I think you're going to win the Melbourne Cup.
Ross, we had KB on a couple of weeks ago, Turfy's old sparring partner. I heard a snippet of a fantastic story you told of a day that KB had accepted a new job at Magic 693, and those numbers just happened to spin up a trifecta later that day, I think it was.
It was Cup Eve. It was on the Monday before the Cup, and someone rang me up, and I genuinely can't remember who it is because Kevin was doing sport, the role that John Anderson does. And they said, you know, this new radio station, Magic 693, you know Kevin's Bartlett is going there. I said, seriously? Okay. So I got on the air the next morning. Before he did his second report, I said, hey, Kevin, yeah, it's Cup Day, but just before the news, make sure you ask me for my tip. He goes, yeah, no worries. We get to 728 and a half, or whatever it is. He says, oh, and Ross, what's your tip for the cup? I said, 693, Kevin, magic. he looked at me and he knew the game was up.
Yeah.
And I went to the cup that day with Andy Rule, and I said, I better take this trifecta. So I took it twice, 693. Jean Paris Lane, Umpala at 100-1.
Umpala, yeah. I remember doing
3,500.
I remember we did a show on a Saturday morning called Glossing. No, not Glossing Over. Heroes and Villains. And
me
and Sly. And one week we decided to get the Melbourne Cup tips from celebrities. And Sly somehow managed to get Chopper Reid on. I don't know if you're... and he was the only one of all the celebrity guests that we got on that particular Cup Eve show or Cup Saturday show. He was the only celebrity who selected the Cup winner that year.
Yeah. Imagine if you did that these days, eh?
No.
Crikey.
Well, Sly just picked up the phone and rang Risden Prison and asked for Chopper and he came on.
We interviewed him one morning on the breakfast program because Sly gave him our number. He was released from Pentridge at 6 o'clock, and at 10 past 6, the producer goes, Mark Reed's on the line.
Ross, we've heard about some of your really successful bets throughout the show, a couple of them. Every punter has a few really bad beats that they've never forgotten. Is there one that stands out to you?
I remember one in particular. I had an all-up with a mate of mine known to Turvey, Mick Bartholomew Turvey.
Mm, yes. One of the brothers.
Mick and I, what's that?
One of the brothers.
We had an all up starting with, it was Derby Day, and I'm going to forget the names of the horses, but Ebony Grove, won. Then there was another thing won, and then a sprint, whatever the thing down the straight six is on Derby Day. It started with N, paid $23. It won because it was my selection, then his selection. Sorry, his selection, then my selection, then his selection. So we're going into the last leg. It's my selection. It's a horse at 40-1 called Romantic Ace. Shane Dye. Shane Dye doesn't get a run until 50 metres from the post. It flies home, is beaten, I don't know, runs fourth, beaten half a length. It ran in the following Saturday on final day, 7-4 favourite, won by four lengths.
Yeah, Mick Bartholomew used to refer to his wife as the chief handicapper, from what I remember.
he also wrote
great kids' book.
Yeah, kids' book on the Melbourne Cup called The World's Greatest Handicap After Dad.
Beautiful book, that one.
Ross, you spoke earlier about one of the key things racing needs to do is tell the story to try and get people engaged. I gather you're a reader of racing books. For the listeners out there, is there a book or two that you could really recommend to get someone into racing or get them to understand some of those great stories?
I'll rattle them off the top of my head. When I was young, when I was at school, I read a book called The Needy and the Greedy, which was a collection of stories by Athol Mully, the jockey, and Frank Hardy, the author. That's pretty basic stuff. You can go to the end of, I don't know if any of you read Something for the Pain by Gerald Manane.
Yes, great, great Australian writer.
Oh, it's a magnificent book. I just think that's, it's extraordinary. And I didn't know Gerald Manane existed until I was reading the New Yorker magazine, and an article started, the opening paragraph was, is the next Nobel laureate for literature tending bar in Western Victoria? I thought that got my attention. And Gerald Manane has written fiction for a long time, and the only non-fiction book he's written is about horse racing, which he loves, called Something for the Pain. And I remember, is it Red Smith? Red Smith always used to refer to his mate Joe Palmer as a great writer. Joe Palmer would have written in the 40s and 50s, and he wrote a book called This Was Racing. And I think I don't want to get the author wrong of this particular story, but I'm sure it's a Joe Palmer story from his book This Was Racing. There's a guy who's had a bad day on the punt in New York, and he's walking home, and he's walking along past the docks, and there's a bloke fishing, and the bloke pulls the fish in. And the punter walks over. He's only got $5 left in his pocket from his day at the races. And he walks over to the bloke who's caught the fish. He says, excuse me. He said, what sort of fish is that? And he said, I'm going to forget the name of the fish. And it's a red emperor. And the bloke pulls $5 out of his pocket. He goes, I bet you $5 it isn't. And the bloke says, what are you talking about? Like, it's a red emperor. He goes, I'll bet you $5 it isn't. And they resolved to settle the dispute by walking to the nearby fish market and having someone there determine, you know, who was the winner of the bet. So they go to the market. First bloke they come across, the fisherman says to the bloke, tell this bloke what fish, you know, tell me what fish is that? And the bloke goes, what do you mean? You know, what sort of fish is that? He goes, it's a red emperor. Like, well, you know, it's self-evident. So the bloke pulls the $5 out of his pocket and hands it over to the fisherman. And the fisherman turns around to go back to carry on his fishing. And the punter says, hey, that wasn't such a bad bet I made. I had every other fish in the ocean running for me.
Yeah, nice. Were you a Runyon fan?
Oh, man.
All of life is 6-5 against. All of life is like six that? To. His great line was, "All of life is 6-5 against."
Yeah, and you know how I know that?
Yeah.
When my father died, the priest asked me what biblical reading I would like read out at his funeral. I said, "No. I want you to read this part of a short story by Damon Runyon called 'A Nice Price.'" You remember, it's when old Liver Lips and Benny South Street and another guy, they find themselves in town at the time of the Harvard-Yale boat race, and they know nothing about boat racing, but they hear a guy offering 3-1 Harvard, and they go, 3-1? 3-1? No. They say, nothing between two things in life is ever 3-1. Mm. In fact, I long ago come to the conclusion that life itself is nothing but a 6-5 proposition. Mm. And that's what I had read out at Dad's funeral. Mm.
Ross, it's been an absolute pleasure having a chat to you. We greatly appreciate you taking the time. We could chat all day, but thank you very, very much. Enjoy your time in France. Hopefully it's a successful time over there, and speak to you soon.
Good on you. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Roscoe.
Having a bet on the racing this week? Top this.
With Top Sport's Best of the Best Multis, top odds are guaranteed. Place a Best of the Best Multi during Saturday Metro meetings for the top fluck or dividend from the best three national totes. Plus, there's Best of the Best to win up to $5,000 too.
Top that. Download the app today. Top Sport. Feel the excitement.
Don't let the game play you. Stay in control. Gamble responsibly.
An early look.
Well, Turfy, spring is well and truly here. It's going to be cold and wet, but there is an outstanding card of racing at Flemington on Saturday.
Those fields came out. You just had to look twice at them.
Oh, you know, enormous.
I know it's McCarthy Diva Stakes Day, but it's probably the not the race of the least interest. It's certainly the smallest field, and it's a confusing race for me. But the deep races, the Exford and the Letzel Open, the Bobby Lewis, my God.
It's unbelievable. Good luck if you jag the quaddie on Saturday. I suspect it's going to pay quite well. We'll kick off with a look at the Maccabi Diva. Only 8 acceptances, but it is a fascinating contest.
It is. There's absolutely no pace here. That's the big...
There's a bit of intrigue there with I'm Thunderstruck drawing one and potentially being bailed away on the fence.
Well, it shouldn't be too bailed away, really, with such a small field. And, he has arguably the best sprint of all of these horses in that race. I think if he's close enough and any decent sort of luck, he's still the horse to beat, but I wouldn't cop 240 about
it. Was it the Turak Handicap or the Rupert Clark? He sort of got held up, and then went through that gap and was too good for them.
Yeah, one of them.
Dash through and one. He was super first up. Cascadian was excellent.
Well, his two runs that I compare him with, I'm Thunderstruck, the one at Caulfield and also the All-Star, they sort of made their runs together. And I'm Thunderstruck was always two lengths in front of him and wound up a little bit more than Cascadian. But they sort of finished on turn. I don't think there's that much between them. And he's just a terrific horse, Cascadian. He can win the race.
I'm splitting, just going back to those two, splitting hairs here, but Cascadian for mine off the trials and jump outs looked more wound up first up. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm Thunderstruck takes more improvement out of that.
And I don't know what you do with Mo Unger. It's getting close to D-Day for him. I think the jockey half pie gave up on him in the Wink Stakes when he got held up and couldn't get the race had gone by and he just sat on him. To the post there, but it's getting close to D-Day for Moonga.
Alligator Blood held up badly.
Clearly the only leader in the race. And yes, he was badly held up at Caulfield. But when he got out, I don't know. I think it was, inconclusive is what I'd say. So to me, is it a betting race? No, but it's certainly an interesting race.
Fascinating race. I'm Thunderstruck, your $2.40 favourite. One race I am keen to bet on.
Yes, I know you are.
Or bet into. Turfy is race 7, the Letzel Lope Stakes. Now, I'm going to back two of them. You're going to back something else, I think. I think we're going to land on one of the same horses, but Yearning.
Yeah, look, she's certainly
Group 1
willing
wrong.
Filly. She's got two in front of her price, hasn't she?
$27.
Yeah, that's a big price. And the fact that she trialled really nicely in Sydney, I'll grant you that. No, I'm not potting her. I think the interesting runner for me is Iron Benet, who's... I don't know if she's... The breeding suggests that she'll run 1,400. I just think she gets such a cheap run.
Yep.
And she's certainly got a turn of foot that she might be able to pinch the race.
I think she's a terrific hope. She was dominant there last time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we just don't know about her running 1,400, but she's going to get such a lovely run.
Yep.
That, I just think she'll sprint, and if she runs the 1,400, she'll probably win.
I think she should be favourite ahead of Kiss on All Four Cheeks.
Yeah, I think where they're going to... I mean, Kiss on Four, does he have to go forward? I suppose he has to go forward, really, because I don't think he's going to come from the tail of the field and win that race. But she's a good mare, and Nick Ryan's clearly got her flying.
All right, I'm having something each way Yearning. I'm also having something on I Am Benet with you there in race 7.
I think Daisies will run well on that race too.
You love Daisies.
I don't
you
love
and TB.
Daisy. She was a good mare for him, but she's jumped out really well. She's going to get a nice run midfield, a little bit of luck there. I think this is her best go, these 1,600 metre races.
Let's get on to the Bobby Lewis.
What a great
quality
race.
Huge field. Swats that.
1-8 Derby's Bobby Lewis and 4 Melbourne Cups.
There you go. Swats that favourite at 550, wide open field. She's trialled well.
Yeah, I've got her on top, Swats that. As I said on the contenders, if... They improve her, Sable improve her like they did Bella Nipotina. She's run in group ones and group twos her whole life. Her Flemington form's terrific. She's jumped out really well, but, as the boy said last night, she's always been a good jump out mare. I thought, Barrier 5, B Mellum, a lot to like about Swats that. I'm not rushing at the price either, I'm just saying. But
you look at her, you look at Verenskova, who's got a lot of talent for Cindy Alderson, but 550 versus 650 for a mare who's coming out of winter racing.
And Mark Zara from Barrier 2 last start did a spectacular job on getting her to the right part of the track. Bigger field here for Craig Williams and a stronger field for Craig Williams to try and get her to the outside. Not too sure about her being down on the inside. The horse that interests me, and it's more interest because of the price, is Poland. I just can't believe he's $70-odd Poland. I know he's a. It's been a long time since he's won a race, but I hark back to a terrific run in the Oakley Plate first up last year, and then a really solid run in the Newmarket, drawing the wrong part of the track. He meets Rockin' Horse, who's flying by the look of her run at Moonee Valley. He meets a kilos better pole, and he ran well on the Newmarket from, I think he drew 14 of 16, and of course they all, the first five, finished on the... on the flat side. So I just think he creates interest. I mean, I wouldn't be talking about him if he was 20 to 1, I wouldn't mention him.
Yep.
But $71 or something, you've got to have two bob on him, surely.
All right, well, that's a quick look at Flemington Saturday. Really looking forward to the day. Make sure you tune into racing.com right throughout the afternoon. I will.
Having a bet on sport this week? Top this.
Whether you're into cricket and curling or golf and greyhounds, Top Sport will let you on for plenty. And with literally hundreds of markets from your own backyard to the international stage, Top Sport has you well covered. So if you want to get the top odds every time, bet with Top Sport.
Top that. Download the app today. Top Sport. Feel the excitement.
Don't let the game play you. Stay in control. Gamble responsibly.
A look from the book. Presented by Top Sport.
Well, welcome now to a Tristan Merlihan from Top Sport. Tristan, how are you?
Yeah, very good, boys. How about yourself? We've got a good day racing coming up and a good one just gone. So always a good time of the year now.
Tristan, how's the betting going for the premiership market after the football?
Oh, here we go. Self-interest.
Saturday, I assume there's been some pretty significant money go for certain teams based on their performances and injury lists as well.
Yeah, the Swannies were very, very firm, very hard after their big win and then obviously getting to host week three. So into $3.20 there, the Swannies.
It's all about the Swannies, is it? That's fantastic. Paul was just dangling the line, trying to get a little bit of self-confidence about his cats.
Shows the Queensland bookie doesn't know the AFL markets. Maybe we should get on with
launch
Top Sport.
On with Top Sport.
Yeah, I might have to.
Have a chat to Tristan afterwards. No limits for you, I wouldn't have thought. So better way, my friend. Maccabi Diva Stakes on Saturday, Tristan. It's a small field. But has there been much betting interest early? It's an intriguing sort of affair.
Yeah, it is. These sort of fields, when you've got a favourite, you know, around about the 225 mark or 5-4, as Turfy would like to say, it generates good activity on the race with the, you know, 4 or 5 really hard in the market there. We actually laid I'm Thunderstruck about a month ago at $6.50 and $5. So a few punters are pretty happy with themselves now that it's into 225. It hasn't been massive betting since we've gone final field, but I really expect the punters to step in to a couple of these on race day.
Not sure you'll lay him at 225 myself.
I reckon he might ease out closer to $3.
Yeah, I believe 280 somewhere like that would be more acceptable, certainly for me, Tristan, if you cop the tip there. what about, has anything been back to beat him? Because it seems very even outside of him.
Yeah, there was a little bit of money early doors for Western Empire. It was $6 into $5.50, but it's drifted back out to $6.50. So I think punters are just, you know, probably just trying to work out where they want to be if they are opposing on Thunderstruck. If you do feel the horse will drift, which I'm not convinced it will, I think it'll be pretty solid in the market. But if you do think it will drift, then, yeah, they have to come for one of the others, whether it be Alligator Blood or Cascadian or Western Empire. Even Moonga there at $9.50, you know, one of those will firm quite significantly. But at the moment, we haven't seen a lot of activity post the Barry draw.
What about the spring features? We've got markets up on all the big races. We had declarations for the Cups last week, or Cups, the Cox Plate, and also the couple of guineas. We've got weights out next week for the features. Has there been much activity in those early markets?
Yeah, you generally find, from our perspective anyway, in these early markets around about now, you lay a few of the rougher options. So punters are just trying to sort of, you know, look for some horses at double figure odds and more specking. Then you get a few multis through the shorter horses as well. But from our end, the 3-year-old races generally see a bit of activity early doors. So the Caulfield Guineas has been very well supported. The Tijuana there, it's firm from 26 into 14, where we laid a couple of good bets at 26 and 21. And then Aspen as well, $12 into $7.50. That'd probably been the two biggest goes, I'd suggest. But it is around about this time of the year, after you've seen a few of the early runs of the preparation, where punters really start to step into the grand finals.
You been to Tijuana?
In Mexico? No. No, I haven't. But it's great rhyming slang to you, won't it?
Early money, Saturday. Has there been one that punters have latched onto? Somewhere around the country. Doesn't have to be here in Victoria.
Yeah, well, it is actually in Victoria. The one they've really latched onto is in the Bobby Lewis quality in race 8. The bottom weight has been absolutely smashed. $8.50 into $5. We laid it at $8.50, at $7.50, at $6.50, and then into $5. Actually, it was a little bit lower there for a while too. But no, the toppies obviously come out, Kementari, but really no deductions have affected that price. So it is a genuine go. Bottom of the weights, barrier 3, Craig Williams on board. So it might be worth including in multiples at the punters end.
So don't you reckon the barrier is a big hindrance to her?
Look, I think she's really smart. I quite liked her last start. I was glad to see Mark Zahra able to weave the passage he did. But, gee, it's a big step up.
Big step up.
Anyway, we'll wait and see. Punter's really confident there with Veron Skova. Clearly a talented horse for Cindy Alderson. Lay of the day. Lay of the day. This, I'm telling you, it needs to go to the front of the show. It needs to be the first thing we do. I'm not the producer, though. Come on. Gee.
Mate, you're the executive general manager of racing now. You can do whatever you want.
You can.
He already does, too. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
You're the puppet master now.
Ridiculous. Attractable last week was the lay. Peter Moody took out the race, but not with Attractable. He took it out with his stablemate Pounding, so continues the amazing run. Who are you taking on this week?
Yeah, this week I'm going to change things up a little bit, which might be a worry, but we're going to go away from Melbourne. I thought most of the favoured runners in Melbourne seemed about their right price this weekend. So I'm going to Rose Hill in the Run to the Rose, one of the features down there. Best of Bordeaux is the $3.70 favourite, and I'm struggling a little bit to understand why it's that short in the market. I thought Fireburn should be very, very close, if not favoured, as opposed to Best of Bordeaux. So I'm certainly going to be putting Best of Bordeaux in for our maximum in that feature there, the toppy. That's race 7, number 1 at Rose Hill.
I'm with you there on Best of Bordeaux, and another slow or heavy track, I suppose.
What about that track on Saturday, how it played?
It was bad. I mean, they did get a bucket of rain there during the day. But
Melbourne wasn't overly better.
And I'll tell you what, it's very hard to sort of get your teeth
look
right.
Look at Matt Welch's eyes when I criticise.
Right into Melbourne at the moment, because we just don't know about the weather between now and Saturday. There's rain predicted. Will it fall at Flemington or next door to Flemington?
You know, at least you know Flemington will race really well.
It will, but as I said to you, the last time I walked Flemington, I was a little bit surprised at the state it was in because it's been pristine
for
years.
Well, Lee Jordan said on After the Last on Monday night, the rain over winter hasn't helped the case there.
It was so noticeable. Yep. You know, Caulfield and Flemington, there's no comparison between them, which is unusual.
Caulfield is in outstanding shape.
It's in great.
The Melbourne Racing Club spokesman is back.
Let's go to the multi.
You won't be able to say that in a couple of weeks' time.
Bring it on.
Let's go to the multi. I don't know why this is still in the rundown, but anyway, we should just take it out and get Tristan to give us two lays, but that's what the punters want. Yeah, can you remember what yours is?
Yes, of course I can.
What about on Spring Contenders where whoever's producing and putting the graphics up always plays with you? You've got your betting strategies. They take their time putting it up, and there you are like a duck paddling underwater.
I've gone for El
no
Rocco.
Comment?
No, you're an idiot. I've gone for El Rocco here as my place bet. I know he's up in class. You know, he's been racing basically in benchmarks, but he's rock hard fit, and any rain is a big plus for him. Drawn beautifully. He's an on-pacer, 54 kegs. He just looks so well-suited here. I'm staggered that Jamie Mott's in at 54 kilos.
Or old John McCart will be scratching his head if he's listening.
He can't ride at 54, can Jamie Mott? That's going to... He'll have to chop a leg off.
All right, so that's El Rocco. Racing
that's
well.
My leg.
Racing well, been in good form this preparation,
he's
Paul.
My best
I like that the bloke who's delivered less legs of the multi gives the longest summary of his bet. But don't waste your time, Turf.
Come on, Simon, get on with yours.
Well, mine did win last week, in case you were listening. What's that? The place...
Did a flog.
change stables, which always, I reckon, helps.
Thanks,
Ben Mellon. Did you know that? I said up there, you're like, oh, that's interesting. Look at him.
All right.
Grin.
I've gone yearning the place. I think
what?
It's $7 the place. If you want a second one, if you want to go a second one, I'll go I Am Benet in the same race. So maybe two options. But I'm yearning the place, Tristan.
Well, that's a bit of spice for the dividend.
There's a very gutsy selection there. So we've got Flemington race 4, number 16, our Rocco the place. Then Yearning race 7, number 1 at $6 the place. And Swats that race 8, number 12, $1.95. So that works out at $29.25. We'll do our pirate multi as well because there's a bit of value about that one. So we'll see what that one pops out when I pop it up on the site later on today.
Now, Tristan, our producer's asked me not to say
Don't say it. No.
So for a very 1 week off, I'm going to listen to him. We don't listen to him very often on the show.
No, you don't.
Is that I'm not going to say that it's can't lose. I'm not going to say it. So we'll
just wait sort of said it.
You just I'm not going to say it.
Speaking of our producer, do you reckon Turfy's ever looked at the rundown?
Looking at his phone, it's about not 20 years old.
Not for 40 years.
Have I looked All right. Tristan, thank you very much for your time. Have a good weekend. Don't have too good a weekend. We want the punters to hopefully get on top. But best of luck. We'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Speak to you next week.
Now, Turf, if I could bet on news stories, I'd make a lot more money than I currently make. The vetting of international horses, I don't want to spend much time on it. It's a pretty dry subject. If you had a futures market of stories that's going to dominate the spring, this is going to be one of them.
They've relaxed them, have they not?
Well, not it relaxed certain aspects of it, but the number of horses that haven't made the trip is higher than I think than has led to believe. There's a lot of unhappy people in racing with significant sway at the moment.
But they have changed. I mean, they made it a lot easier this year.
They made it easier.
So what's happened?
I think the processes, now I'm not saying it's right, the perception from people over in Europe, especially with connections also here, that the process still is too difficult to have their best horses come to Australia. And the second option, which Lee Jordan said on Monday night, there's now rich options based in Dubai and America and Ireland. So watch this space. As far as the story goes, I reckon the vetting protocols is a bubbling issue. We definitely haven't seen the last of it.
Am I right in saying there's 10 decks for the Melbourne Cup, 10 internationals?
Yes. Yep.
What's the quality of them? Because I'm told the issue with weights as well, that
higher weights this year potentially.
So how would you surmise
that? Derby Legends, currently favourite, was very good at York last time out, so brings a reasonable form card there.
Very good at York doesn't jump. You're not saying it's...
We've got an international free Cox Plate, an international free Caulfield Cup. All you need is a bit of bad luck and we'll have an international free Melbourne Cup. I don't think most of the punters, I'll be honest, care. But I think as an industry, there's a lot of people that do. And as a new executive general manager racing that will be coming in, that's going to be a big part of the job, I think, is to bring that back.
All right, that's all we've got time for on a good three.
What are the racing journals going to write about if there's no internationals here? Seriously, that's all they write about.
Local stories.
Yeah, well, good.
You're speaking to an editor-in-chief of the dedicated racing newsroom in this state, so throw it back on him.
I always look at the person that I'm not talking to.
Right.
I think it's time to wrap this up.
Time to go. That's enough. We'll see you next week.
That was a good three, presented by Racing.com and Top Sport.